Welcome to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NXT Podcast. Once again, I am your host. My name is Zachary Smith. You can always find me on Twitter. I am at ZachNXT. That's ZachNXT. You can find me over there, always talking about wrestling and other things in general. If you ever want to talk about the show or anything in wrestling in general, you can hit me up over there. Now, we are in store for, I don't know, maybe a good episode of NXT, maybe a bad one. Last week, we changed it up a bit and did a watch-along for this, or last week's episode on Hulu, and it was fun, so I'm going to try it again, and you let me know what you think, whether you like the review format we've been doing before, or if you like this new watch-along format. Now, if you're not in front of a computer or other device that can play it, don't even worry about it. I'm going to describe everything to you. You're going to get my golden voice laid over this entire episode, so you don't need to watch it, but if you want to watch it at the same time, could be pretty fun. Now, here on the NXT Podcast, you know we cover the news and notes going on in the wrestling world. There's not a ton happening in the wrestling world, except that WWE, in its infinite wisdom, decided that the solution to plummeting ratings and a general distaste for the product that they are putting out is to introduce that there is going to be a Thunderdome. Now, I am not super clear as to what the Thunderdome is going to be, and frankly, neither are you, or is anybody, or maybe is WWE, if I think about what I know about WWE. It seems as though it's going to be some sort of virtual fan experience, so it sounds like we're going to have fancy Skype calls with a bunch of fans in the arena so that it doesn't seem like there are just Performance Center athletes in the crowd. That's the best that I can figure. WWE has a tendency to fall back on its production values. Ever since Vince took over the company and was fighting to take over all of the territories to monopolize the wrestling business, the sports entertainment business, they've fallen back on their production. Our show looks better, it sounds better, and we have young stars. Now, we can't fall back on the young stars because although WWE says it's interested in them, it's not. So, we fall back on production values. We look better, we sound better, we are the best in terms of presenting our product. Now, that is true. WWE is absolutely the best at production values, although AEW is giving it a great run for its money and has paved the way in a lot of ways during COVID. WWE is taking some cues from AEW on COVID, certainly not limited to the testing that WWE recently decided it would be important to go ahead and do, although Ric Flair still remains on the shows, so that's not what we would consider super great, but they're falling back on the fact that they can put on a visually interesting show. And the best case scenario for this Thunderdome is that it allows fans to see other fans enjoying the show. Now, the downside is that you are going to be relying on technology that isn't always going to go as smoothly as you would like it to. You can mitigate some of that by the fact that the show is taped, but you can't because you've already announced that this is what you're doing. Now, on one hand, this could be very interesting. It could be very fun to watch. It could be the closest that we get for some time to fans being able to have something like an experience that you would have watching a show live with an actual crowd. And maybe that works. Maybe that fills some of the hole that has been in wrestling since COVID started, which is, even with Performance Center athletes in the crowd, it's not a real crowd. You don't get genuine reactions from people. I think the larger point here is that having virtual fans in the arena is not going to fix underlying problems that are going on in WWE, not the least of which is their reluctance to build on new stars, and you would have thought that by now the WWE would have learned its lesson on this since the days of Hulk Hogan. Vince was looking for the next Hulk Hogan. That's why Ultimate Warrior got as far as he did. He found Shawn Michaels and then was trying to find the next Shawn Michaels. He found Stone Cold, and around the time of Stone Cold and The Rock, they stopped looking for that guy. And the deadline, or the absolute line for that, was John Cena. Meaning that the company, in its best times, has been built around one or two main stars. But in the best years that this company has ever had, whether it's the early 80s to mid-80s with the Rock and Wrestling and WrestleMania eras and Hulkamania, to the Attitude Era in the late 90s with Stone Cold and The Rock, to the early days of John Cena and his run with the WWE Championship, you not only had the main star on top, but you had new stars, or at least stars that were coming to prominence newly, coming up. For John Cena, you had Edge, you had Randy Orton, you had Batista, you had Shelton Benjamin, you had other people on the show that could be in that spot. Now, it was probably going to come back around to John Cena at some point, but they had people there. In the Attitude Era, you had Mick Foley and The Undertaker and Kane and Triple H. In the early 80s, you had Randy Savage and Paul Orndorff and Roddy Piper. You had people that were on the rise, if not in age, then at least in prominence. And at this point, WWE is not taking advantage of that. The best that they have for Ricochet, Cedric Alexander, Mustafa Ali, Otis, and Tucker is background roles for terrible stories that they're telling, which leads us directly to the other problem, which is terrible stories. I don't care what kind of Thunderdome you put on, it's not going to make cutting away to Raw Underground or bad segments any better. Now, I sincerely, and I do mean this, hope that the Thunderdome is a rousing success. I hope that it helps plug some of that void that we have all been feeling since this started. I have my reservations about it improving the product overall because I don't think WWE is interested in improving their product at all. I think Vince has tightened his circle of people he trusts, and I think all of those people have been in the wrestling bubble for many, many years. And on one hand, that experience is wonderful. It helps you make more informed decisions and predict trends based on what has happened before. But on the negative side, it gives you an over-reliance on those trends. Well, this worked before, and this is the way we do it, so this is the way that it's going to work. And instead of adopting new ideas and new ideals, they accuse fans of just being internet fans who are not a majority, despite the fact that they have been for some time, call the fans marks and fall back on the excuse of, well, when you take a wrestling company to the heights that WWE has been in, or when you've been in this business 20 years, then you can talk. And that's why a lot of people flock to the Wrestling Observer, or fans flock to other companies, because there is an inherent arrogance in that way of thinking, and thinking that my way is better because I've been doing this a long time. Now, I say that to mean that Bruce Pritchard and Vince McMahon and whoever else, Triple H, whoever's in that inner circle, could certainly run a wrestling company better than I could. But that doesn't mean, when I point out that Raw Underground is not going to be the solution to these problems, that I'm just a mark internet wrestling fan who doesn't know what I'm talking about, because I've never had to make those decisions, and it's easy to have 20/20 vision, despite the fact that a lot of fans have predicted that things aren't going to work, and then lo and behold, they don't. So, again, I sincerely hope that Thunderdome works out and makes us all feel great about wrestling, but I think until the people who are in charge of making the decisions in WWE either change or change their way of thinking, we're going to have a lot of these same problems. Because if you notice, everyone who's complaining about WWE, or anybody who has stopped watching, nobody has said that the explicit reason that they are stopping is because there are no fans. That is certainly part of it. It makes wrestling feel less special. But if you gave compelling stories, people would still watch. If this were the Attitude Era, people would still tune in to see Stone Cold and The Rock. And Stone Cold and The Rock are once-in-a-generation maybe, if you're very lucky, performers. And I understand that, but it's also the way the show was built, the show was made, and the attitude of the show, if you will excuse the pun. So, again, I hope that this is a rousing success, but I hope that much, much, much more importantly, the decision makers change. And I think at least in WWE, that's not going to happen for a long, long time. So we are kind of stuck with that. And you know what else you're stuck with? Is me. I'm here, and we're not changing nothing. Now, as I said, we did the watch-along last week, and that was fun, so we're going to try it again. Now, I am watching NXT from this week on Hulu. Right now, I have it queued up on my computer. It is at 0:00:00. So in just a second here, I'm going to say 3, 2, 1, play, and on the word play, I'm going to, you guessed it, hit the play button. If you want to watch at home with me, you certainly can. Just start it at the same time I do. We'll watch it through. You can talk. I won't hear you, but in my spirit, I will hear you. If you don't have it right in front of you, no need to worry at all. I'm going to be walking through what's happening in the show, and you're going to get that warm commentary that you've come to love here on the NXT podcast. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Now, as I said, Hulu version, we are at 0:00:00. So if you want to get ready, I'm going to say it in just a second. 3, 2, 1, play. As we see Hogan slamming Andre and the then, now, and forever logo coming up at the start of all of our WWE programming. WWE forever. It's kind of ominous looking. Never really noticed that before. Our NXT logo. Okay, and we're starting hot with Johnny Gargano. And the North American Championship is hanging up. There are a couple ladders outside the ring. That's set up much the way it will be for NXT TakeOver on, I believe, Saturday. So Johnny's out with Candice LeRae here. I believe this is going to be Johnny Gargano versus Ridge Holland, and the winner of this match moves on to the NXT ladder match for the North American title. It's interesting that they're already hanging up the title. I like to think that they just didn't want to do it on the day, and somebody just did it so that they wouldn't have to worry about it later. Johnny's new theme, I don't think is as good as his old theme. That's just occurring to me. Now, I don't often have a chance to react to just the entrance music because I'm usually writing something else down at this point, but it's one of the interesting things that I get to do just watching the show. This is one of those matches that it feels like Johnny Gargano was the obvious winner of this because Ridge Holland is still fairly new to wrestling. He was a rugby player who came over. He's had at least a few matches on NXT UK, but he's relatively new to wrestling. So, I wouldn't think that you would put somebody that is relatively new in a multi-man ladder match. It seems like there would be a lot of stuff to keep up with in that match that maybe somebody who is green wouldn't be able to necessarily keep up with. Ridge Holland impressed me in that triple threat match with Damian Priest and Oney Lorcan. So he can certainly do more than your average athlete turned pro wrestler. But it seems like the kind of thing where Ridge Holland is going to have a good match with Johnny, get himself over a bit, but not quite make it to the ladder match. So we'll have to see. Ridge Holland's gimmick appears to be he's like a standard angry dude who's just always kind of in a bad mood and looking for a fight, which is fine. It's kind of like a Finley thing. As we cut to another shot of that North American Championship, in case you forget why we're here. So, Ridge Holland. So, Ridge Holland certainly looks the part. This is, I said it last week, he has the look of somebody who Vince McMahon is going to see on one of the weeks he decides to watch the show and want him on the main roster immediately. But he's one of those guys that should not go to the main roster because he's not going to be ready. NXT is great for getting somebody seasoned and getting them ready. But when you call people up too early, it's not great. It doesn't end up working out well for those folks. Bell rings, and we're getting started. Again, I believe winner of this match moves on to the ladder match. I don't remember how many spots we have open in the ladder match anymore. The end of this qualification for the ladder match has been a bit confusing. We kind of limped to the end for the qualifiers, as Rich Holland just drops Johnny to the mat and throws him into the corner, because Rich Holland is here to fight you. So, we had excellent qualifying matches, a lot of them triple threats, and then we kind of limped to the end, as I said, with basically the people who were in the triple threat matches but didn't directly lose getting another shot at qualifying, and it kind of made it feel like you didn't have other people that were able to even have a match to qualify. Isaiah Swerve Scott comes to mind. I would have loved to have seen him get a chance to be in this ladder match. I think he would add a lot. I think you have a lot of people on the NXT roster that have been performing and have been here that maybe could make better use of this, or at least make the qualifiers more interesting. But then again, what do I know? I've never run a wrestling company, you know? Rich Holland is outside the ring talking smack to Candace. Johnny jumps out of the ring, but Rich catches him. Johnny gets out of that and kicks Rich Holland in the face, which is a rude thing to do. Stamps on Rich Holland's hand, which is a rude follow-up, frankly. It's a mean thing to do to a guy, you know? Like, it's just European uppercut by Rich Holland. That's clearly one of the things he is good at. Rich Holland does a good job of selling and making it look like he is hurt, but he's also just getting more angry at you, which certainly works. You're not usually going to see that from a babyface, but for a heel, that can work really well, or for an unstoppable monster. So we get a graphic that says on NXT tonight, it's going to be Finn Balor versus the Velveteen Dream. Huh. They call it a mega main event. Now, in the news, it said that Triple H made a statement about the Velveteen Dream, that they looked into the allegations against him and found nothing, and his absence has been due to, I believe it was a car accident. I don't know how WWE looked into it or what specifically I nailed that word, guys. You hear that? Specifically is what I was going for, though you wouldn't have known it listening to it the first time. They looked into, it feels like maybe the WWE is not the best people to look into something like that, but I don't know. What I do know is that it's still very weird seeing the Velveteen Dream on my TV screen when this still feels unresolved, and I don't think his gimmick helps. His gimmick is kind of a very sexual, he's doing a Prince impression, and that I think is adding to some of the discomfort that I have with it. And so seeing him in the main event with Finn Balor, while I imagine it'll be a good match, I think I'm going to have trouble enjoying it as much as I would have, say, a year ago. But, I mean, it's on the show. We're watching along. We're gonna watch it, you and I. So we'll see. As Johnny's trying to get Ridge in, I guess, a knee lock here, and gets it on. And again, Ridge looks like it hurts, but he looks mad. And then flips it over and is kicking Johnny in his face, which again is a rude thing to do to a person. It was a pretty lively performance center crowd, although they're doing that thing where I hear noise, but I don't see it. You see it a lot in WWE when they sweeten the crowd, where you'll hear a crowd reaction, but you don't see the crowd reacting, which makes me think maybe that's what's going on. As Johnny suicide dives out of the ring onto Rich Holland, there's a little teeny bit of space in between the two ladders that Ridge was standing near. I feel like that could have gone real wrong. That's one of those things that didn't look dangerous until I saw how close the ladders were, and then realized it's very dangerous. We cut back from break, and everybody's freaking out, and I'm not sure why. Oh no. Oh no. Oh no, 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 no. That's not good. Johnny was selling and ran at Ridge Holland. Ridge Holland went for a power slam, and it appears as though Ridge Holland didn't get enough rotation on that power slam and appears to have dropped Johnny right on his neck. I'm not a wrestler, so I can't say for sure what happened there, but it looked like Ridge Holland just didn't get enough rotation on it and quite literally dumped Johnny on his head and neck. That's scary. So Johnny's just standing in the corner. I think at this point he's selling. Yeah, okay. So he super kicked Ridge Holland. So he was selling, but I think Johnny might actually be hurt here because I don't see how you get dropped on your head and neck and you're not hurt. God, that looked so bad. This is one of the... Unfortunately, this is one of the risks. Johnny tries to jump over for his apron DDT, and Ridge punches him in the face, and... That's one of the risks. Oh, front face lock by Ridge Holland, and now he's swinging Johnny, which is an odd spot to do after you drop somebody on their neck, and he suplexed Johnny all over the place here. That's one of the risks you have as Ridge gets a two count of somebody new or relatively new getting in the ring, where I don't know if it's a situation where maybe he hasn't practiced that move a lot, or if it's one of those things where sometimes things just go wrong and maybe their timing wasn't quite right. That's some of what I think happened there, but that looked really bad, and that could have easily ended Johnny's career. I mean, neck problems are nothing to mess with. You can ask Stone Cold or Kurt Angle or Edge or just about any wrestler. That's nothing to play with. And I hope Johnny's okay. He seems fine, but wrestlers have this unwritten code that they finish a match no matter what. I've never necessarily agreed with that sentiment because I want people to be safe and as healthy as possible, but Johnny's definitely going to finish this match as Ridge hits the pounce tackle on Johnny, and Johnny rolls out of the ring. As he is a rugby player, you knew he was going to do a pounce. Boy, this is one of the times when having a performance center crowd helps, because I feel like if this were a real crowd, they would still be a little bit shaken by the fact that Johnny might legitimately be hurt here, whereas a performance center crowd was probably just told to move on and react like it's a normal match, and so they are. As Ridge Holland has taken some time to argue with Candice LeRae, and then tilt-a-whirl, basically, Johnny, and drops him face first on the apron, hardest part of the ring if you didn't know, and rolls Johnny back in. Man, that was... And, okay, so Candice grabs Ridge Holland's leg as he tries to get back in the ring, and Johnny kicks him in the head. Figured that was coming. Looks like we're setting up for that apron jumping DDT, and we were indeed. Johnny hits it. And one, and two, and three, and Johnny wins. So, Johnny Gargano is going to go to that NXT North American title ladder match. So, Johnny is selling the neck, which is, you know, that's what you should do. So it's Johnny and Cameron Grimes and Bronson Reed and Damian Priest, and then either Finn Balor or the Velveteen Dream that are going to make up that ladder match. But Johnny is selling the neck here, which is definitely the right thing to do. But boy, oh boy, it feels like Johnny might have really gotten messed up there. And they're replaying that spot, which is, I don't know about that. That's not great. Don't know that we should be replaying it a bunch. And then we see the draping DDT from Johnny to beat Ridge Holland. I hope that this doesn't have huge repercussions for Ridge Holland. I think this is a situation where Ridge Holland just doesn't do that move anymore. And I hope that it doesn't have an overwhelmingly negative effect on his career, because I think there is a lot of potential for Ridge Holland in NXT and in WWE. But if you are labeled as unsafe, then that can be the end of it. And I just hope that's not the situation. As we get a graphic up that Dakota Kai is in action next. When somebody is just in action, it generally means that that's going to be a squash match with an enhancement talent. That would make sense to get somebody ready for title matches. Dakota Kai will challenge Io Shirai for the NXT Women's title at that takeover. That's one of those things where I know Io is going to win, but I like Dakota Kai a lot, and so that should at the very least be a really, really, really good match. So Dakota Kai comes out. She has like a real glittery wrestling outfit on. It's catching the light and it's very bright. Dakota Kai, again, challenging at TakeOver. She had a great heel turn at War Games against her team, and she turned on them and turned on her best friend Tegan Knox, and that part was great. And then the follow-up feels like when there were real crowds that she wasn't getting that reaction that you would have expected based on how she turned as Jesse Kamea. I hope I'm saying that right. Is coming out. Not sure who that is. Let me see. No, I don't recognize her. That could just be being dumb, but I don't know. She is walking to the ring like an enhancement talent. There's a very specific entrance that enhancement talent have, and Jesse Kamea has it. I don't know. It feels like, I don't know if they didn't capitalize on Dakota Kai or if it was just a situation where fans just weren't buying it. I don't know what happened, but she hasn't felt like a big deal, and maybe it's because she hadn't been really in the title picture at all. As Dakota Kai takes down Jesse and starts punching her right away, and she's still punching her. I don't know. It feels like now Dakota Kai feels like a bigger deal because she is in a prominent position and she's going to be in a title match and have a really good match with Io Shirai, hopefully, at TakeOver. Maybe that helps. That Io is doing a great job of elevating the people she's in the ring with and putting people over. And so hopefully she can do that for Dakota Kai because you can put people over while still winning. Just making them look strong and like a credible threat. So that could help. I would think that like maybe a Raquel Gonzalez helps Dakota Kai in that match and kind of adds an element of danger. Although she hasn't been on TV in a long time, it seems like. But I don't know. Hopefully Dakota Kai will like be more prominent. As Dakota Kai runs around the ring and Jess is in the corner and Dakota Kai kicks her a couple times. That's one of the few times that WWE doing too many camera cuts helps because Dakota Kai didn't come close with at least the second kick. Not faulting her for that, I'd rather you be safe. But that camera cut very much saved them on that. Dakota Kai has a submission locked in on Jesse here. She basically has her in a chokehold where Dakota's using Jessie's arms pulled behind her head to put kind of herself in a sleeper hold, which I haven't seen a lot. I feel like I've seen it before, but not very often. It's a very interesting way to apply a submission hold. And this is the part where the enhancement talent gets a little bit of shine on who you're trying to build up here. Jessie goes for a roll-up and then a spinning heel kick while Dakota was on her hands and knees. Does essentially a Superman punch in the corner. And then does like a, while Dakota was sitting in the corner, like a baseball slide that I think was supposed to end in a knee. But because of the camera cut and because I think she slowed down more than she thought she would, it didn't quite come across. Jessica May goes for a cover after putting Dakota Kai on her shoulders and then hitting a spine buster, which is a different setup for that. Only gets a 2 count. That's where the ref counts 2 on the mat. As you know, the ref has to count 3 on the mat for you to win. So Dakota Kai wins, it just now occurred to me that her finisher is called the GTK, the go-to kick, because it is essentially a go-to-sleep, but instead of just hitting a knee, she throws the person off her shoulders, falls on her back, and does a kick. It's not as good as the go-to-sleep. I think the problem is that you're falling onto your back, which makes... With the go-to-sleep, the person, like's head landed on your knee, and it felt like it would really hurt. This, I think, because you're on your back, and you're falling at the same time as your opponent, and it's a kick rather than a knee. I don't know. It didn't work. But that's okay. She said, you must be out of your mind, Dakota Kai's mic. Everything you said about me just proves my point even more. You think I'm afraid of you? I mean, I do. Don't make me laugh. That was British. You're so focused on the people of my past, while I'm focused on the future. Okay. Said takeover. I'm going to take that championship from you. Yeah, it just now I learned while doing this live that I can't do an Australian or a New Zealand accent. I can... It just turns into like... It turns into this, which isn't... That's not right, is it? It's just kind of like a... it's almost there, isn't it? But it's not quite. And Dakota Kai is interrupted because Io Shirai comes down to the ring. Because if you talk about Io Shirai, she's going to come down the ring and fight you. She just wants to fight. This is interesting when you have somebody who isn't going to cut traditional promos like Io. I don't know how well or not Io speaks English, but I know that in WWE, if you don't have that as your primary language, then they'll often have you not cut promos. But it works with Io Shirai because she's a bad woman. Okay, there we go. And Raquel Gonzalez comes up out of the curtain, hits a big boot on Io, so Raquel Gonzalez is back. That's okay, whatever. With Io, it works because she's like the strong, silent type that just fights you. Like with Asuka, it doesn't work because they decided to make Asuka the killer really goofy and like dance all of the time. Because I am so sure it's because Vince thinks it's hilarious and he's the only one. So she just like dances and is like a comedy character. And then they try and pick and choose when she's going to look like a killer, and then it doesn't work. Io has been nothing but a killer as Io starts to attack Dakota, and then Raquel Gonzalez hits a powerbomb where both of Io's legs were on Raquel's right shoulder. That's an interesting way to do a powerbomb. Makes Raquel look very strong. Okay, I'm going to give myself like half credit for calling Raquel Gonzalez because I didn't really call it. But I thought she might show up just because she hadn't been on TV. I don't know why. But before a title match, it would make sense that Dakota Kai would want to have some backup. And it at least gives a little bit more of a threat to Io Shirai in the match that Raquel might get involved at some point. There's somebody else you have to deal with that could be interesting. And again, I don't think Dakota Kai is going to win. So it's not like there's going to be a cheap win there, I don't think, as Dakota's making the championship motion around her waist with Raquel Gonzalez, and Io Shirai is laid out in the ring. I mean, again, this is one of those things where Io Shirai is definitely going to win, but it should be a great match. Oh, Finn Balor. Said, Velveteen Dream, our first experience was interrupted, as we get clips of them in their standoff the last time. Finn says he's earned his place in this business. You keep getting chance after chance after chance. And in my book, you failed. I mean, that's a good point. He has been putting a lot of chances, but has failed. So you're not going to get in the way of the Prince being the next North American champion. Man, this sucks because this feels weird. And I hope that I'm not the only one that feels like this just feels so weird to see Velveteen Dream back. And, man, it feels like he's going to win, doesn't it? I don't know, but it feels like Dream's going to win. And it would just, boy, it would feel a lot less weird if Finn just were in the ladder match to me. But I mean, WWE or Triple H has said that he looked into the allegations and didn't find anything. So as far as WWE is concerned, that's all that they need to know. But, you know, just as a fan, it doesn't feel great. Tag Team Championship match, number one contender, Legado del Fantasma, Breezango, and Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch. Triple Threat Tag Team match, winners presumably take on Imperium for the tag titles at TakeOver, I'm going to guess. Boy, I hope it's Breezango. They're fun. Breezango's so good. Shock the System comes up because it's time for the Undisputed Era. Okay. And it is Kyle O'Reilly, Roderick Strong, Bobby Fish, and there's Adam Cole. They look all business. As a reminder, they are all business because they have a quarrel with former NFL punter Pat McAfee. I like Pat McAfee a lot. I really do. And I'm happy he's here, but I think I'm still sour on the way that they set this up initially and the follow-up with that basically interrupting a tag team match. Appears as though Pat McAfee's going to be coming out here. They're all in the ring. They are anxiously awaiting Mr. McAfee to come to the ring. Oh, there's Pat. Pat came in from like a side entrance. Pat McAfee's got some dudes with him too. Is Pat McAfee going to be the heel? Because Pat McAfee's coming out like a bad guy. Okay, Pat McAfee has a microphone. He is gold on that microphone. Well, hello, Undisputed Era. It's a very nice way to start. Says, last week you said, please come see me. Pat says, I'm here. He's got 28 years of NFL experience with me. He's got three dudes with him that I don't recognize, but that doesn't mean they're not important. He says, you'd be nothing without these three stooges. Say, you can never come face to face with a human like moi. Huh. And Adam Cole says, I got this. So the members of Undisputed Era are gonna leave the ring. Says, you ready to start now, Pat? Yeah, I'm pretty sure Pat McAfee's the bad guy in this story, which is very interesting. One, because that would mean Adam Cole's going to be a face, which he hasn't been in WWE. And it's interesting to have Pat McAfee be the heel. Pat McAfee's in the ring. Said, you remember what happened 2 weeks ago? He said, you probably don't, but I'll remind you. Shawn Michaels was checking for vitals on your soulless body right over there. Okay, next is stupid Tom Phillips, which is just a mean thing to say. Tom's over there sitting by himself. Oh, boy. He says, you were held back. You took advantage of a situation, blah, blah, blah. I outsmarted you in your own house. Wow. Oh, yeah, Pat McAfee's a bad guy. Somebody said you suck. Pat said you suck. Wow, I did not think Pat McAfee was going to be the bad guy. That's super interesting. Wrestled in front of five people in armories, bingo halls. Wrestled all over the world. said you're the biggest star in this brand. King of NXT. Said you had all these people fooled. 400 and some days, you held the NXT title. Took me a minute and a half to knock yours out. Wow. Okay. Said you call me not special. Step in this ring before it made you look amateur. Oh. Man. Okay. This is a good promo. Said, y'all better hope I don't stick with this profession. I mean, millions of dollars in 7 different careers. This could be number 8. Pat says Saturday it's going to end the exact same way that it ended a few weeks ago. Going to be left unconscious and throwing a temper tantrum after losing your mind. Wow. Okay. So you only gave me 2 weeks to train for this match. Oh boy. Pat says 2 weeks is all I'm going to need to beat you. You're going to have to explain to the entire internet wrestling community how you lost to an outsider. Said you're great in this world, you are. He said, but I am next level. Said I'm above you as an athlete. Man. Said Saturday, it's going to end with one swing of this foot, meaning your face. Oh, wow. Okay, so said the only sound any of you will hear is boom, and then he threw the mic at Adam Cole, bounced off the mat, and like went through his legs, and Adam Cole was standing in the corner, but now he comes out to the middle of the ring, and now security's here. Pat McAfee's jaw-jacking because security is holding Adam Cole back. Okay, and now Adam Cole's going to attack security. Yep. Adam Cole took out all of the security. Undisputed Era and Pat McAfee's guys are still here. Adam Cole's just staring at Pat McAfee, who now looks concerned, because Pat McAfee's a good heel. Adam comes up, and Pat McAfee's boys get in the corner, and then Undisputed Era jumps in the ring. Adam says, "You want to do it right now? Tell your boys to get in the ring. We will mangle you right here, right now." I wouldn't, like, necessarily recommend it. You already have Pat coming in, who's brand new. I don't know if I want 3 other brand new dudes. This Saturday at TakeOver. Okay. Adam Cole said, this Saturday at TakeOver, I'm going to make you my B word. Except he said the word. Didn't say it with a microphone, just said it into the corner. And the camera audio picked it up. And now, the entire Undisputed Era is leaving the ring. The dudes with Pat McAfee did that thing that non-wrestling people do, where they just kind of smile the whole time because they're not really sure what to do. And then, wow, at TakeOver, we're going to have Adam Cole versus Pat McAfee. I mean, again, not crazy about how this started, but Pat McAfee being the heel is super interesting. Apparently, Pat McAfee's a really good heel. So, I don't think Pat McAfee's had a ton of time to prepare for this match, just because, like, he's not a wrestler as of yet. But I certainly trust Adam Cole to have a really good match. Is a preview of the NXT Championship match between Keith Lee and Karrion Kross up next. How much you want to bet it's going to be a bunch of creepy stuff? And I bet you he's going to say TikTok. I bet you so much. Pat McAfee, got his chance to do a promo. And I always figured that Pat McAfee's skills would translate to wrestling because he is a very, very, very good talker. And he just proved that again, actually. That was a really good promo. He got his point across very clearly, came off as very cocky until Adam Cole had him in a disadvantageous position, and made me want to see Pat McAfee get beat up, which is a heel's job. So, good job by him. We're cutting back to the NXT Great American Bash, pretending we're not counter-programming edition. It's Keith Lee with the North American title before he challenged Adam Cole in the winner-take-all match. And now, seeing a few clips of that match, and Keith Lee... Keith Lee taking the last shot from Adam Cole and kicking out. Adam Cole getting one finger on the ropes. Okay, so we're going to do like a fade to black thing after Keith Lee went. Okay, so Keith Lee hits the Big Bang Catastrophe. Still cannot believe they let him name it that. And Adam Cole wins. And he has both titles. Makes it feel a lot less special now that he gave up the North American title. I get why he did it, but it really takes away from this moment now that I think about it. And I'm seeing it again. And Scarlett and Karrion Kross. And Karrion Kross and Scarlett watching him from the rafters. Okay. I'm going to be honest. There's a voiceover here, but it's just kind of... Each day, a man attempts to climb a mountain. I'm going to be honest. I don't care. So I'm not going to tell you what they're saying. There's like a... Appears to be a volcano that's about to erupt as we look at Karrion Kross. Yeah, that was a volcano erupting. And there's Karrion Kross and Scarlett with flames around them. And shots of Karrion Kross beating up enhancement talent. And just generally spooky shots of Karrion Kross. And there's him taking out Ciampa at TakeOver In Your House. And he beat Ciampa down. I don't dislike Karrion Kross. I dislike this gimmick. It feels like somebody playing a monster rather than a monster. Dijakovic and him getting into it and him taking out Dijakovic. And there's the TikTok. There it is. There it is. And then here's the match between Kross and Dijakovic. Dijakovic is quite a bit taller than Karrion Kross. I forgot about that till I just saw him going face to face. And him injuring Dijakovic, putting his... Was it his head in the steel steps? And Keith Lee coming out to ringside, and then Karrion Kross choking out Dijakovic. Okay. And then... Being the monster that he is, Karrion Kross doing nothing when Keith Lee got in the ring, and then Karrion Kross walking away. You don't get to be tough and, like, scary when you run away and send your girlfriend to come give contracts to people to sign for matches. Like, it doesn't... You can't be TikTok, I'll hurt everyone you care about until I get a title match, and then also have your girlfriend come give a contract. And I forgot this dumbest part, that Keith Lee was given that contract, opened it, and a friggin' fireball was in it. That is, that's really dumb because you didn't need it. I don't understand why they did that, but Keith Lee opened a fireball contract, and so I guess, you know, that's, it's just on even more now. And yeah, okay. And it's shots of Keith Lee and Karrion Kross and Scarlett and Yeah, and then TakeOver Kross versus Lee. Okay, great. If Keith Lee's going to lose and go to the main roster, I would love to see Keith Lee on the main roster, but boy, oh boy, am I not going to be super excited if Karrion Kross is the NXT champion, because I don't see an end in sight for that title reign, and two, I just don't think feuds would be that interesting, because This one certainly isn't. It's Keith Lee's first feud after winning the NXT title, and to me, this just feels like nothing. This is like a monster who's been too scared to get in the ring with Keith Lee, sending his girlfriend over to do his dirty work for him and relying on like cheesy, creepy horror videos to get his point across. And I don't know if this is just me, but it's not landing. So, you know, here we are. And here's Finn Balor. So again, this is Finn Balor versus Velveteen Dream. This is our last qualifying match. And the winner goes on to be added to that North American title ladder match at TakeOver. So, boy oh boy, this feels like Velveteen Dream's going to win, and it's going to feel weird, and you and I are just going to have to experience it together, just as good buds. And I don't know. This just feels... I'm also unclear in the storyline how Velveteen Dream was added to this. They specifically said a couple weeks ago that it was people who were in a triple threat match and specifically didn't lose. And Velveteen Dream just came back, so he wasn't in one of those qualifiers. So it's not a second chance. I guess you could argue that he would have been in one of these qualifiers and like is getting a chance now, but I don't know. It feels weird that Velveteen Dream comes back and is just inserted back into the title picture. I think, putting aside for a second all the accusations and stuff that makes me feel weird here, Velveteen Dream just as a character has been handed or has been put in a lot of great opportunistic positions, and generally he doesn't capitalize on them. He's been in NXT title matches, he's been in North American title matches, and he tends to get to the big match and lose. So while I feel like this is going to be Velveteen Dream winning, I feel like there's no chance of him winning the ladder match. And even if all this stuff weren't happening, I think you can only put somebody in a title match so many times and have them lose before you just start seeing them as a loser. And I think that might have been part of the problem with Velveteen Dream before all this started. He didn't feel like a big deal because he was essentially allergic to big matches. Velveteen Dream is making his entrance. The Velveteen Dream gimmick never really did a ton for me. It just kind of seemed like Vince McMahon heard a Prince album and decided it would be a cool character. Velveteen Dream is very talented, and he certainly works his character well, but I don't know, it never really clicked for me. Like, in the ring it did, because he's very good in the ring, but other than that, not as much, and now it's just doubly weird. So, yeah, this really feels like Velveteen Dream is going to win, and that's weird. Velveteen Dream climbs under the ladder for no particular reason, just because he's quirky. He's got like a soul patch, like chin beard now. So like that's his like quarantine beard. So generally when people come back, they either come back with like a new haircut or new facial hair or like a bunch of tattoos. And it seems like Velveteen Dream kind of just came out with like a soul patch. Velveteen Dream poses, he does his like Macho Man Randy Savage turn with his arms out. It somehow just occurred to me that that's what he's doing. Like, I knew it was familiar, but I didn't know why. And then I remembered that it's Randy Savage. Always good to pay homage to legends, and I could certainly see some Randy Savage in Velveteen Dream, so I like that. To say the least, the elbow drop he does, but a lot of his kind of out of the norm character certainly fits. Velveteen Dream's wearing one of those like mesh see-through shirts that isn't quite long enough, so it's kind of a belly shirt, and sunglasses, and for some reason he's wearing both of those as the match has now started. I'm not sure what we're doing specifically there. Finn Balor grabs his sunglasses while he has him in a headlock and throws the glasses out of the ring. I think it just kind of, and takes Velveteen Dream's hat off, throws that out of the ring. Kind of just makes it seem like Velveteen Dream's not taking this super seriously. And that's weird. Like, you're qualifying for the NXT North America title ladder match, and you're facing Finn Balor, who's a really, really good wrestler, and, like, as an opponent, you're not taking him seriously. So, I mean, I guess you could do that. He's still wearing the mesh shirt, and that's so weird to me that he's still wearing the shirt. It's weird that a wrestler wearing more clothes feels weird. That's something I have to think about for myself, but it just feels weird because he usually doesn't wrestle in a shirt, and it's a mesh shirt, and I think that's what's really bothering me, is that it's a mesh shirt. I think that's my big problem here. We come back from break. Velveteen Dream lost a shirt at some point as Finn Balor has him in a rear chin lock, and then Velveteen Dream breaks out of that with a jawbreaker. Morwinalo said that it's Finn Balor versus Velveteen Dream in a second chance scrap. This is not a second chance scrap for Velveteen Dream. This is a first chance scrap. Fez press by the Velveteen Dream, and he's punching Finn Balor in the face. He keeps throwing up the NWO 2 suite for some reason. I think he said Wolfpack in the house and howled like a wolf at the camera. I don't really know what we're doing there. The two sweet. And then throws Finn into the corner head first. Silently howls at the camera again. Because, you know, why not? Why would you not? He did the two sweet to Finn. Oh, right. He's doing the two sweet because it's Finn Balor. It has been so long since Finn Balor did anything with that that I had completely forgotten that he did it in Bullet Club. I forgot all about it. That's my fault. That's me being dumb. That's me doing this podcast after getting off of work, and I got a dumb brain a little bit. Now he's kicking Velveteen Dream's leg, and Velveteen Dream is like dang near backflipping, selling it. Velveteen Dream's really good at selling, and he's very athletic, so he has a tendency to launch himself for big bumps, and that certainly makes things look even better than they generally are. So that's always good. They're both on the mat. Finn Balor had him locked in like a kind of a cloverleaf submission around the legs. So it really feels like Finn should win this match, but it feels like Velveteen Dream's going to win this match. So, I mean, it should still be a really good ladder match. It's just going to feel odd when it doesn't really need to, I guess. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it, I suppose. Velveteen Dream finally makes it to the rope and breaks that up. And Finn's just going to be focusing on the leg here today, Velveteen Dream, which when a wrestler just picks a body part and works that over, that generally makes for a pretty good match at the very worst. So I don't know why that is. I don't know if it just kind of makes it more believable or kind of helps you feel the story more, or there's like more visual representation of it. I don't know what specifically it is, but it always kind of makes for a more interesting match. I've never really been sure why that is, but kind of never fails. And Dream almost has an armbar locked in and then just kicks Finn Balor in the face a bunch. And then lets that go. Probably should have just done the armbar at that point. He kicked him in the face a bunch. Said a brutal, brutal intensity, says Morrow, by both of these competitors. Oh, yeah. Morrow mentions that Finn Balor is looking to become North American champion for the very first time. I forgot that Finn was already well gone from NXT when the North American title came around. Before Adam Cole, it was widely accepted that Finn Balor was the best NXT champion of all time. I imagine there's people that would still argue that. I would say it's Adam Cole. I mean, 400 and some odd days as champion, and it never really felt stale. I think that's probably the best NXT or most accomplished NXT champion ever, maybe. I mean, Finn Balor maybe had a more exciting, compact run. And then Finn Balor has the advantage that he went to the main roster and at least at first did really well. Won the Universal title basically out of the gate. Unfortunately got hurt in that match with Seth Rollins in a match where everybody was just booing that the championship belt was red. I remember that. That was fun. They were having a really good match and fans just booed like hell every time that title belt was on their screen. And that was hilarious because that belt was weird looking. And sometimes you just gotta let people know when they have bad ideas. Because friends don't let friends run with bad ideas. And that's the wisdom I want you to take with you here today. Finn Balor's still focusing on that leg. Stomping kind of a mud hole in Velveteen Dream in the corner. And big back elbow from Dream and then jumps to the top rope and drops two fists on Finn's head. Doesn't seem like the best idea to go to the top rope when you're hurt. Velveteen Dream is outside of the ring. He's now staring up at the NXT North American title. Oh, come on, man. So Cameron Grimes is out here. He said, I'm here for that. He's pointing at the North American title. I'm going to guess. Okay, so now we're back from break, and Cameron Grimes is sitting on top of one of the ladders holding the NXT title. I'm going to guess there's a couple reasons for this. One, Cameron Grimes wanted to stake out the competition, slash doesn't want Finn Balor to win, so he might help a little bit Velveteen Dream win. And then I'm also going to guess that Cameron Grimes is there for either Velveteen Dream or, like, one of the other people in the ladder match to take him out and hold up the title at the end. I'm going to guess here because Cameron Grimes is usually just a setup guy. Cameron Grimes is in the ladder match at TakeOver, so there is that. He's sitting on top of the ladder, and I would imagine, I've never sat on top of a ladder. I'm a big boy. You don't sit on ladders. I imagine it's very uncomfortable to sit on top of a ladder, especially for the duration of a wrestling match where you have to kind of act cocky as Velveteen Dream does the Hulk Hogan side bicep pose. Cameron Grimes is just sitting up there mugging and talking crap. And kudos to him. I imagine that's hard to do and make interesting the whole time, and he's doing it. But it seems very uncomfortable to just sit on top of a ladder for minutes on end. I'm not sure why he needs to be out here for this part, but I mean, Cameron Grimes is good at this, so, you know. Finn Balor has Velveteen Dream in the Tree of Woe, where you basically have your opponent's legs tied up in the ropes and then kicks Velveteen Dream a bunch, which is always good, and can't cut to Cameron Grimes. He's laughing and patting the North American title. Big chop by Finn Balor in the corner. Chops are always great because you can hear them, and you running chop, and you can immediately see, like, the other person's chest getting red, so you know it really connected. So there's a little bit of a wince every time there's a chop, just because you know that has to hurt, right? I've never taken a chop, personally. Don't plan on it. But that it seems like an uncomfortable position to put yourself in. They are spilling out to the outside of the ring. And seems as though Cameron Grimes is trying to get down off of the ladder. But Finn Balor's now climbing the ladder to chase after somebody who is not involved in the match that he's currently in. Velveteen Dream gets him off the ladder and drops him face first on the apron, hardest part of the ring. So Finn Balor decided it was more important to attack Cameron Grimes, who wasn't really doing anything. That's an odd strategy to take in a match that should hypothetically be important to you. Cameron Grimes is yelling, "This is my title right here." There's no way he wins, right? Like, there's no way you put all these people in this match and then Cameron Grimes walks away with the title. Velveteen Dream, like, rolls through from the mat with a fireman's carry, and then Finn Balor drops him from there. Appears to be setting up for that drop kick into the corner to set up the coup de grace. And drop kick is done. So Finn Balor hit the drop kick. He's going to be going up into the corner that Cameron Grimes is near. And again, instead of just hitting his finishing move, Finn Balor is staring at Cameron Grimes and talking back and forth with Cameron Grimes, who I will remind you is not involved in this match. And because he did that, Velveteen Dream has time to run up and hit a superplex, because Finn Balor, in storyline, is not smart. Rather than focusing on the person he has to beat to get in the North American title ladder match, he's decided, forget it, I'm going to just do this. And here's Johnny Gargano, who has come out, pushing over the ladder that Cameron Grimes is on, and Cameron Grimes has to jump at the very end to clear that top rope. That was a good job by him. He gets spilled into the ring. He also took out the referee. So the referee's doing that thing where he's acting like he's dead because he has to be distracted for something. And Cameron Grimes realizes where he is and goes to attack Finn Balor, but Finn double leg presses him and stomps on him. Velveteen Dream hits a Famouser on him. Sling Blade by Finn Balor, and he wants that drop kick into the corner again. But super kick by Velveteen Dream. Yeah, you should have just hit the coup de grace when you had the dude. Whatever. Johnny Gargano now has the North American title, and here comes Bronson Reed. Johnny runs into the ring to try and get away from him, but Bronson Reed gets in the ring very quick for a big boy. And Johnny's trying to back up and runs back first into Damian Priest and doesn't look, but puts his hand up to feel Damian Priest's face and goes, "Aw, damn, that's funny." He's saying, "We're cool, right?" to both of them. And Damian Priest punches Johnny. Bronson Reed throws him out of the ring. And now Damian Priest is holding the title and was looking at Bronson Reed, throws it to Bronson Reed, then kicks him in the face. Super kick onto Damian Priest by Velveteen Dream and Bronson Reed. Clotheslines both of them over. Velveteen Dream's holding the North American title that he has not even gotten close to yet. Finn knocks him out of the ring and then dives onto Damian Priest and Bronson Reed, who, again, I feel necessary to remind you, are not involved in this match in any way whatsoever. Then Timothy Thatcher comes out, because we don't have enough people out here yet. So let's get Timothy Thatcher in here. He rolls Finn into the ring after attacking him briefly. And Velveteen Dream hits the Dream Valley Driver. And Timothy Thatcher's walking to the back now. Dream's going to the top rope. Says to the ref, "Wake up, you don't want to miss this." Hits the elbow drop on Finn Balor. And one, and two, and three. Okay. So Velveteen Dream takes the last spot in that ladder match. And that was a lot of people involved in that. So Johnny Gargano, Cameron Grimes, Bronson Reed, Damian Priest, and now Velveteen Dream. 5 people, 1 ladder match. Winner is the new North American champion. Oh, we're not done. Johnny hits a super kick on Velveteen Dream. Johnny seems okay, but hope he's okay. Johnny sees the North American title. He's walking over to it slowly. Picks it up. He's smiling at it. Kisses the North American title. He's holding it up. And super kick by Cameron Grimes onto Johnny Gargano. He picks up the title. Choke slam by Damian Priest on Cameron Grimes. And clothesline by Bronson Reed onto Damian Priest. Bronson Reed picks up Velveteen Dream, drops him, So it appears Bronson Reed is your last man standing and holds up the North American title, which virtually guarantees that Bronson Reed will not be winning the North American title, because you don't get to pose with the title last if you're going to win. Yep, everybody else is down, and Bronson Reed is holding the title. So Bronson Reed's not winning, because that's how wrestling works. Cool shot of Bronson Reed at the end holding the title. I think they do that to try and get you used to the person holding the title, but that isn't the sensation you get. So, pretty good episode of NXT this week. Better than last week, certainly better than a couple weeks ago. I sincerely hope that you had as much fun as I did doing this watch-along. Again, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at ZachNXT, ZachNXT. Let me know over there. What did you think of the watch-along? Do you prefer the reviews where I just take notes before and big picture go over what happened? Or do you prefer this watch-along where I'm kind of just watching it with you or describing it to you? I have a lot of fun doing the watch-alongs, but I want to hear what you think. If you have anything you want me to hear me talk about on the show, you can also shoot that over to me there. A lot of my friends' suggestions have ended up in the show proper. So, news and notes or anything you want to hear different about the show, or just tell me how good of a job I'm doing. Again, ZachNXT on Twitter. Otherwise, this has been another week of the NXT podcast, and thank you so much again for joining me. I have been Zachary Smith. You have been fantastic as always. Thank you, and have a great rest of your day.